Hey, everybody, and welcome again to the Only Movie Podcast. You know it, it's Viewing Angles. I'm your A-host, Big D, and with me, as always, is the one-armed man, also known as...
Robert Mecki. You took my joke. I was going to make that joke, but you took it.
Gotcha. You can't pre-plan this stuff, Robert. I'm not thinking about anything.
Stick to the script, Dan.
Hey, I switched your lines with my lines. The whole operation
is falling
apart.
I'm Dan Leo now, yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, we're going to try and keep it as normal as possible as we sift through this episode, which we're reviewing the new live-action Disney remake, Dumbo, The Tale of the Flying Baby Elephant.
Yeah, that classic. But before we get into that, before we start making fun of this movie, how about you give me the numbers of the Big B?
The big box office. Well, Robert, you got Big D, the man himself, Dumbo, coming at number one at $45.9 million. A little under expectations, I think, is what everyone's saying. But
is
still
it? How much was Disney really expecting this fucking movie to make?
I mean, I think Disney is probably, if anyone's going to way overvalue the Disney brand, it's going to be Disney.
That's true. This is the same company that thought A Wrinkle in Time was going to make like $70 million opening weekend.
Right, and it ended up making like 35. Like,
yep, yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, well, coming in at number two, we've got Us again at $33 million. So still pretty healthy. It's now at like over $107 million above its budget.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So that definitely is going to get 17 sequels starring Vin Diesel and The Rock. And
I don't know,
spin-off.
Man. I'm still waiting for a sequel to Get Out.
Get In?
Yeah, exactly. I either want it to be called Get In or I want it to be called Ball Out.
Ball Out, yeah, where Daniel Kaluuya just goes on a killing spree.
Yeah.
I'd watch that movie. And then number three, you got Captain Marvel holding strong at $20 million. You know what's it's interesting is that this is only doing a little bit better than The Hunger Games did domestically, Captain Marvel.
Yeah. There's really not a whole, like, I don't think word of mouth has been too great for this film. But, like, you know, internationally, like, its global box office is nearing $1 billion. So clearly this is a mainstay. I just wish this movie was better. I wonder if this movie's going to still be in theaters when Endgame comes out.
Definitely, right? Because it's only going to be...
a month?
Yeah, I mean, well, if it's at $20 million right now, we've got, what, 3 weeks until Infinity War comes out?
Yeah, I wonder what its average drop is. It looks like it's like 30... It drops about 30 to 40% each week.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably out of theaters. It'll be in theaters this week. Probably in theaters the next week. It'll probably drop, honestly, when Avengers comes out.
Yeah.
I bet you'll be able to see Avengers. I bet you'll be able to see Captain Marvel and then go right into Avengers.
Well, they're already promoting the Captain Marvel Steelbook Blu-ray I've been seeing ads for.
Awesome.
Yeah. So definitely going to be getting that one.
Who has got, and maybe you're the right person to ask, but do you have a lot of Marvel MCU Blu-rays? Like,
no, I don't have any of the movies on Blu-ray. I have Captain America, the First Avenger on Blu-ray, but the rest I just have digitally.
So you have like all of them, though?
Oh, yeah. I have the whole collection in iTunes. I just don't have any physical copies.
All right. You're a psychopath, but I think we all know that.
I'm just a fan. Don't hate on fan culture.
How many times do you think you've watched? What is the one you've seen the least, and how many times have you seen it?
The least, probably The Incredible Hulk. I've only seen that twice.
Yeah.
So
you spend FX a lot.
Yeah. And that's honestly probably where I've watched at least like 70% of it. It's just, it was on TV and I'll just finish it out. Be like, I like to imagine alternate timeline where Edward Norton stayed as the Hulk, where he stayed as Bruce Banner. Not that I dislike
think he's
Mark
a good
Ruffalo.
Hulk. I think he's an okay Hulk.
I think he's I liked him. I really wish he would have stayed, but I really hope that when they inevitably time travel in Endgame, they go back in time and Mark Ruffalo is just replaced with Edward Norton.
And that would be really funny.
And then what's his name? Don Cheadle is replaced with Terrence Howard. I was about to say Terry Crews. Like, I would have been fine with that, too. Terrence Crews.
Yeah. No, they should go even farther back, and he
right.
And Ruffalo is replaced with Lou Ferrigno. What? Oh, really different.
Oh man, get the guy who originally played Captain America.
Yeah, I have no
Chris
idea.
Chris Evans is going back to playing the Human Torch.
Yeah, it can all happen with our help.
Yeah,
let's segue and go into the highs, the lows, and the toss up of the week. Let's start with the high. We've got a poster for the Joker with apparently a trailer dropping as we speak at CinemaCon.
It was dropping tomorrow. Oh, yeah. So they played it at CinemaCon, and I guess it's going live tomorrow for the entire internet to see. I'm pretty hyped. Now, I'm sure by the time this episode comes out, everybody will have already watched it. Hopefully it's good. I hear from the people I follow who are at CinemaCon right now that it was interesting, at least. So take that as you will.
But how do you make a boring trailer for a Joker standalone movie?
You get that's Todd Phillips to direct it.
Yeah, all right. You know, yeah. I mean, has he done anything besides the Hangover?
Yeah, he did War Dogs. Don't you remember War Dogs?
Starring Jonah Hill and Miles Teller.
Yeah,
he never saw it.
He also did Due Date.
Starring Zach Galifianakis and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah,
never saw it.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't need to.
Right. Isn't this being produced by Martin Scorsese or something?
Yes. And it's starring Robert De Niro. So, like, I'm incredibly interested. Yeah, it's starring Robert De Niro and Marc Maron and Joaquin Phoenix. So the cast is fucking stacked. And I really don't think this movie can go that wrong. Like, I don't think we're going to see another, like, Suicide Squad or Justice League from DC. But I'm very curious to see what this movie is, what the tone of it is, and what Todd Phillips's interpretation of the Joker ends up being. Because I've heard a lot of comparisons to The King of Comedy, which is the classic Scorsese film starring Robert De Niro as a failed comedian who descends into madness. Nuts. Yeah. And I guess the tagline on the poster, what is it, like, put on your happy face?
Yeah, that's put on a happy face.
Yeah, that's a line from one of the main themes of The King of Comedy. So I'm assuming that there are going to be a lot of parallels in this film. But yeah, so we'll see how it goes. The poster looks good. I like that it's not just like a standard character with his back facing the audience poster, like looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, they're going for something more genre-driven, I think.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess comic book movies are genre films. I mean, not really. I think he's going for a more like a subset, like a crime, you know. And to me, it's more about this movie exists, which is pretty insane. And I'm just really intrigued to see what they come up with, because this seems like a slam dunk.
When the news first broke that Joaquin Phoenix was playing the Joker, how did you react?
I thought, like, yeah, sure, he could do it. Like, I didn't know. It wasn't one of those things where, you know, when Heath Ledger got announced, everyone's like, no way. The guy from 10 Things I Hate About You and Brokeback Mountain, doubt it. It was like, oh, yeah, no, of course, that guy could definitely.
What if it's the polar opposite, though? What if it's like everybody's like, hell yeah, Joaquin Phoenix can do it, and it's fucking terrible?
yeah, I mean, that is a distinct possibility that I am always ready for. You know, I try not to get too hyped up for movies because, you know, I've just been, you get burned too many times of you don't know a movie until you see it. That's kind of what I've been trying to instill in my brain. Mm-hmm. So I'm really cautiously optimistic. I will definitely be seeing it just because I think it's an event.
Oh, yeah. I can't not see this movie. I don't care if it has a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm still seeing this movie.
Yeah, I'm probably more likely to see it if it has a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, if people
than like
fucking
a 50%.
Hate it, then it immediately becomes more interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's nice to wait and see on that. I'm excited for the trailer to really just get a glimpse of what this is going to be like.
Yeah, super hyped to see how many more fuckboys have this fucking poster hanging up in their dorm room now.
Oh, yeah. This will be a big college thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's move on to another Joker related news, I guess, which is kind of funny. I didn't even think about this. Yeah, we have Mark Hamill, the best voice of the Joker from the Batman the Animated Series, will be voicing Chucky in the new Child's Play reboot
This God, came so out of reboots. Nowhere. Like, I thought they had already announced who was voicing Chucky, and I thought it was just kind of like a nobody that they could pay nothing to do a voiceover
they already,
for.
I mean, they already have a trailer for it.
Yeah, but he's not in it. I saw the trailer. Like, Aubrey Plaza's playing the mother in the film, which I thought
which
was kind of weird.
Which is hilarious, because she's, like, 30, like...
Right? Yeah. But yeah, so... I'm curious to see the trailer they put out after this news. Like, I wonder if, like, this was a recent development and they just put that trailer out before even having a voice actor for Chucky. Because the movie comes out in, like, 2 months. Like, 2 or 3 months. So, like, they must have... this must be, like, super last minute.
Or do you think they had it the whole time and they just waited until... Like a while in to reveal it? Because, I mean, it was, like, it was big news. It's bigger news than, hey, there's a Chucky reboot coming out.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Like, I guess this is just another way to generate hype. Because I know that the, at least film Twitter didn't seem too excited about the Child's Play reboot up until now. Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, who doesn't like Mark Hamill? Well,
right,
the Last
exactly.
Last Jedi haters don't like Mark Hamill anymore, but whatever.
Yeah.
Fuck them.
Exactly. This will be interesting. I still don't know if this movie needs to exist, but
I mean, it doesn't.
Like, yeah, well, yeah, nothing needs to exist. But is there like a horror movie that you think, Robert, that should be rebooted that you think that they could do better today than they did at the time?
Man, that's a big question. I think that we've gotten a couple good ones. I was gonna say, like, if you'd asked me in 2015, I would say It, because as much as I like Tim Curry's performance as Pennywise, I think that magnum opus of a novel, that fucking 1,000-page Stephen King horror novel, deserved better than the TV series or TV miniseries that I got. But now we're getting that. And It Part 1 was good. I'm assuming It Part 2 is going to be just as good. I really only think of like shitty Stephen King adaptations. Like, I know they made a shitty TV miniseries of The Stand as well. And I think that might be getting rebooted. But other than that, like, I feel like they've done, like, I feel like every good horror movie's already been rebooted and it's just been worse than the original. So
no, I want to see like a Creature of the Black Lagoon remake that is not.
It's happening. Max Landis is writing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that could be interesting then.
It could be, but, you know, he's pretty hit and miss. Mostly misses
he's,
at this
he's
point.
He's been missing for a while.
Yeah, the last good movie he wrote was Chronicle.
Which was like 10 years ago now?
Yeah, I was... Oh, don't say that. That makes me feel so fucking old. But yeah, that was like 7 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I feel like that movie has spawned a lot of like underwhelming careers.
Yeah. We got the Fantastic Four because of it. The Fant Four stick.
Right. We've got Josh Trank's career. It's like, okay, cool. You know, we had Dane DeHaan. Like, okay.
Yeah. You know what I think would be cool? I know that they kind of did like it was like a semi reboot / prequel of Nosferatu with what is Shadow of the Vampire, I think it was, with Willem Dafoe playing Nosferatu, where he was playing the actor who played Nosferatu, but he also happened to be a real vampire, which is just the greatest concept for a movie.
Wait, what's this movie called?
I think it's called Shadow of the Vampire,
because that's a
yeah, it came out in the 90s and it stars Willem Dafoe, and it's about the making
about
of Nosferatu, but Willem Dafoe plays the guy who played Nosferatu. And
produced by Nicolas Cage. I am not joking. That is not a bit. It is produced by Jeff Levine and Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, that's a hoo boy. That's a trip of a movie.
Huh.
I would like to see vampires made scary again, though. I think that'd be a pretty interesting endeavor.
Yeah, we haven't really been doing too much vampires. It's been zombies ever since we had the,
well, it's
the Twilight thing.
Fault.
Right. They had the whole vampire thing kind of blow up and then deconstruct. And then we had zombies. Walking Dead kind of kicked that off. And then now that's kind of come back down a little bit. So now are we ready for actual like scary monster movies, or are we just, you know?
I don't know. Part of me kind of feels like the monster movie is obsolete. and that we've gotten to this level of
we
like,
are the monsters now.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like everybody, like people on Twitter have been talking about how like the term elevated horror is a bullshit term, which it is. But I do think that the direction for like good horror films moving forward is less about like scary monster design and more about the philosophical implications of whatever mm-hmm. your horror story is about.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, I am with that.
Which I think is a good direction for the genre to go. But I'm also always down for some, you know, dumbass gore fest Saw shit. Like, dude, I don't know if you've seen any Saws. Like, even if you've seen the first one, if you haven't seen any of the Saws afterwards.
I've seen the first three, I think.
Oh, damn.
I've seen the first three all the way. And then I've come in and out of, like, the... all the twisty turnsy ones where it's like, no, I'm like the real bad guy. Like all the dumb, stupid twists.
Yeah. So you saw 1 through 3 is like the progression where like that's where it goes downwards in quality. But as soon as you hit 4 onwards, they just become hilarious because of how fucked up the timeline becomes and just how contrived everything is, and the fact that they need Tobin Bell in every movie, even though he dies. He dies in, I think, 3, right?
I think you figure out that he's been dead in 3, right? Isn't that the twist or something?
No, well, one of them he fakes his death and then he dies for
real.
Oh my
God. Yeah.
And then the most recent Saw movie, Jigsaw, that one is, I mean, it's not great. The best, the funniest Saw, I think, is probably like Saw 6 or 7. I think they're on the same level because, goddamn, those movies are just a good time to watch. But Jigsaw, turns out, is like a prequel to all of the Saw films while also being a sequel. But the twist is that the guy, the mortician you've been watching this whole time, started doing these murders like as soon as Jigsaw started doing them back in like the early 90s or whatever. And it just keeps cross cutting between like the murders happening in the 90s and then like the mortician guy investigating them, because apparently somebody like copied the same murders. It makes no sense, but it's hilarious. Yeah.
That's what I want to do. Like some big, like marathons of long ass series, like
Halloween,
like Halloween, Friday the 13th. There was a lot of like long ass horror movie marathon. Just like how many movies they got put in.
Yeah.
But even stuff like Fast and Furious and stuff. I like that idea of just a series that has so many entries that it starts to like reinvent itself at some point where it's like, we know we can't keep doing this.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, hey, we're about to get at that point with the MCU. Endgame should be
the
a total
MCU is beyond that point.
Yeah. Oh, back to the original question real quick. The one movie I would like to see rebooted with a good reboot would be
A
Nightmare on Elm Street. I think that there's so much potential in that franchise if it's not being produced by Michael Bay. And like, I liked Jackie Earle Haley as Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, that was a great reboot. Casting choice.
But goddamn, that movie is so boring and generic, especially compared to like the later Freddy films when he gets really funny. Because that's the best part about those movies, is those movies are terrifying and hilarious at the same time. Just because the concept of like having
the later ones are hilarious. The first few
The first few are still funny, because like Freddy Krueger is just like, he has one-liners left and right, like as he's killing these kids. And like, you know, if you're a weird, gross little fuckboy like me, you think it's actually funny to watch Johnny Depp get blended up into red mush in the middle of his bed.
Which is insane that the more recent one, that's a like a shot for shot remake, right?
Yeah.
From what I remember. And it's like, you can do, but there's also something kind of more terrifying about how janky the special effects were. Like,
that's what I like.
They were good, like the special effects, but like at the end, when like he grabs like the screaming woman, like, and rips her through like the little hole in the door.
Yeah.
And it's like the way that it's so like otherworldly makes it more disturbing.
Well, that's what I like about those 80s horror movies, and why I think a lot of 80s horror films just shouldn't be touched at all. is like The Thing, I think, is the best example of practical effects that always be more terrifying than whatever CGI monstrosity you throw at the screen. And like we saw that with the Thing 2011.
And I think The Thing also had the perfect like idea
for for
a prequel, like even.
Yeah.
Like, because that's how it starts, with like these, you know, Swedish people or Finnish, whatever, like trying to kill this dog. And
right.
Like,
yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, that's like, we know that something already happened.
Yeah.
So like, just show us that. And I can't believe they screwed it
up. And then they showed us it and it was like, oh, so they went onto The Thing's fucking mothership and tried to fight it there. And like, oh, God.
Yeah, that's not what I needed from that.
What a disappointing prequel, sequel, remake thing.
Yeah. All right, let's move this gravy train along.
And yeah, we're going to be talking about this next subject for like a solid 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's the low. The low is that the guy who invented MoviePass wants to create a service where you can get free movie tickets by watching 15 to 20 minutes of advertising content.
I've seen this Black Mirror episode.
Right, and the way that it'll know that you're watching it is it'll incorporate face tracking technology to make sure you're watching every last second of it. I don't even have anything really to say other than this is just fucked up. And like, I get what it's trying to do. I don't know if I want to support something that's tracking my eyeballs, like to watch ads. Just like, I hope that this just like dies a shitty death. And no one ever looks at it again. Cause you know, we're going to get to the point where to watch like YouTube videos, like you're going to have to watch an ad and we're going to have to make sure that you watch it.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm very split on this because one part of it is like a dystopian Black Mirror idea.
Part of it, all of it is.
Okay. Well, no, my views on it. Part of it feeding into my split opinion on this is that yes, it is a terrifyingly dystopian, like, invasion of privacy regarding how you consume ads or how you're forced
to
consume ads.
How you use your eyeballs.
Yeah. But the other part of me, because I'm a cheapskate, is also like, oh, well, that's free movies for shit that I already do on a weekly basis. Like I was telling you earlier, I guarantee you I watch more than 15 to 20 minutes of advertisements of my own will on YouTube. Like when I'm at home and I'm just browsing Reddit or browsing the internet, I'll look up movie trailers and watch them anyway. Like if I can get a free movie ticket out of it, fuck, why not?
I'm just like, you know, when I go to the Regal, I watch 20, you know, if I show up there on time, which I never do, then I sit through 23. I've looked it up. Like it's 23 minutes of trailers.
I worked in a movie theater. Yeah, I worked in it. So it's a 15 minute minimum of trailers before the movies. At least in the theater I was working at.
At the Regal that I go to, it's like down to a science, 23 minutes exactly.
Yeah. Is that including all like the pre-show, like newbie stuff or whatever they call it?
No, that's when the trailer, like when the lights go a little bit dim.
Damn.
And then they start showing the trailers. Yeah. It is a long trailer process.
Yeah. And you paid to see that. I'd rather get paid to see that.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. I'm like, if I could just go, I would show up on time if they're like, hey, this movie will be free if you just watch all these trailers.
That's a good idea. That's what you should pitch that to Regal. Be like, hey, you should just, if you want people to watch through these fucking advertisements, just get them to show up early, watch through the entire thing, and then they get a free fucking popcorn out of it or something.
I'm going to patent that idea right now. So all the Regal executives who are listening to this podcast, do not steal it.
Exactly. But I also think the other part of me is like, I think it'd be kind of cool to get the data of where people are looking for video marketing to see how to optimize.
Like, I don't know. That's sometimes you don't need like that's.
I don't know. I think that'd be kind of cool. And that's only just because of the industry I work in, but I think that'd be pretty shit. Like,
we work in the same industry.
That's some cool shit.
Nah, that's terrifying. We don't need that. Like, advertising already doesn't work. Like,
it doesn't work, then you're not doing your job well enough.
It works well enough, but it's just like, why intrude on people's lives even more? Like,
I mean, they chose it.
Sure, yeah. All right. So you don't believe in wage slavery, you've
None. Dude, we have already established throughout the entire, like, the history of this podcast, I'm a full-blooded capitalist.
Right, yeah, exactly. Why don't you just read a fucking book for once, Rob? Come on,
oh my God, the only books I've read are by Ayn Rand. I have the entirety of Atlas Shrugged tattooed over my entire body.
Yeah, that's... It's really grotesque. I don't like it, and stop showing it to me. I wish you would put some clothes on when you do this podcast with me.
Yeah, the letters are actually so small. It's just a bunch of weird black dots all over my arms. But
yeah, you look like Killmonger.
Gross.
Every cut is another word in Atlas Shrugged. It's another word in the 70-page speech by John Galt.
All right, I'm going to do the Fountainhead next.
Yeah, dude. Speaking of the Fountainhead, I want to just get into this because I know you're going to have a field day. The Snyder Cut exists. We've got confirmation from the man himself.
We've all had, all the faithful have had confirmation forever. Also, so, if you get a chance, go check out my Twitter banner. It's really good.
Oh, I bet it is. But Rob, explain to the normal people what the Snyder Cut is.
The Snyder Cut is essentially Zack Snyder's 3-hour long initial cut of wanted Justice League to be. Hey, dude, Endgame is going to be 3 hours, 2 minutes. Like, Lord of the Rings, which of those movies are over 3 hours? Like, is it Return of the King?
The first two are both like exactly 3 hours.
I thought Fellowship was a little shorter. I thought Fellowship was like 240.
No, I think it's like, I think they're like, one is like 256 and the other one is like 302 or something.
Oh shit. Yeah. So don't complain about 3-hour movies.
Yeah, I'm not. Why do you think I am? No, I'm talking about your Twitter banner. That's what I was reacting to.
Oh, okay. Didn't know. Wait, you were looking at it.
The Fellowship of the Ring is 3 hours and 48 minutes? That can't be
what?
Right.
No, that's like a director's cut. That's the Snyder cut of the Fellowship. There's no way Fellowship is 3 hours 48.
All right, you keep explaining to the people what, or did you already explain everything?
No, so the Snyder, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's just the Justice League cut that Snyder initially wanted to release that I'm assuming had a significantly different tone and sense of humor and plot points than Joss Whedon's Justice League. And for those who aren't caught up on the DCEU history, Snyder was forced out of production of Justice League, I think like 3 months into, was it post 3 months? I don't remember if they completed principal photography or if he got kicked out in post, but it was pretty soon after. He got kicked out like 4 months before Warner Brothers came out and said that Snyder's being replaced with Joss Whedon. So it was pretty sketchy there. And like, obviously the execs at Warner Brothers, who don't know what they're doing, because like, one, fuck that guy who like just got Me Too'd out of his position. The guy that kept on trying to pull Snyder's 3-hour magnum opus of Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
But he basically confirmed in a director, like a meet the director style conference in California, that he actually called the Snyder Cut, which is hilarious to me. I love that he's like in on the meme.
Oh yeah, he's gotta be. That's gotta be the only thing keeping him from being cripplingly depressed.
Okay, so we'll get back to the subject in a second, but I can't wait to see what his next film is like, just because like, one, I don't want to, this is going to sound awful because I feel very badly for him for having lost his daughter to suicide. Like, I can't imagine what kind of emotional stress that puts you through as a parent.
I don't like the butt that's about to come here.
No, well, I'm just going to say, I feel like that is going to significantly affect his filmmaking and affect like the types of messaging that's coming through in his art from here on out.
Right, like he might turn into a real nihilist with a penchant for violence.
Oh, no, he's already there. Like, I can't wait to see where he goes from there.
There's no way to know. I'm, you know, also, yeah, I feel real, my heart goes out to him, and it's just a... I hope that he can find some solace in getting back to work and getting out of these, you know, comic book movies and hopefully doing something more personal to himself that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, helps. Well, that, like he said, he's working on the Fountainhead. Like he said, that's one of his dream films.
Which is insane.
Which, I mean, it's not, I feel like not real. Like if you look at the philosophy of a lot of his films, I feel like a lot of it is Randian. Like Batman vs. Superman is Randian in a lot of aspects.
Go for it. Yeah.
So, one, Superman, this is the first Superman I think we've really gotten where the government is an oppressive force against him.
Okay.
Which I think
sure
is pretty, you know, self-explanatory if you're familiar with Rand's philosophies.
Yeah. Like, you're just like, yeah, the government doesn't like Superman.
The government doesn't like Superman. Yeah, I mean, okay. Do we need to talk about Bruce Wayne, too? Because Bruce Wayne is already...
We can wrap this into a whole episode just dedicated to you examining every different thematic aspect of the Snyderverse.
Eventually, I swear to God, maybe for our 52nd episode, we're going to put out video content eventually. I'm just going to throw my entire thesis on Batman vs. Superman and view it through hopefully multiple philosophical lenses and see... Like, I just want to explain why this movie is smarter and also dumber than a lot of people are giving it credit for.
Dumb as people give it credit for.
No. I think it's like, okay, well, some people give it credit for being dumb, but I think that it also people are trying to negate like the smart setups that the film has for at least a good 2 hours of its runtime. It's dumb conclusions that I think make the film as hated as it is.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I can go with that. There's definitely some build up. Yeah, I want to see your video essay on.
Okay.
On all the good stuff.
I'll try to keep it under 5 hours.
I don't believe you. All right. Well, let's issue any more talking of
this is great news.
Movies.
I don't know why this is in the toss up section. This is great news. The Snyder Cut. I guess it's in the toss up
because you'll never see it, Robert.
Yeah, because Warner Brothers is never going to release it. They don't want to acknowledge Zack Snyder's genius.
Yeah, exactly. What's, you know that the Holy Grail exists and it is at the bottom of the fucking ocean and
that's
no one will
okay.
ever get it.
I definitely think people will look back on Zack Snyder's DC universe in a better light in like 10 years from now. Kind of like how people hated Stanley Kubrick's films as soon as they came out. But now are like, you know, film literature, like film theory classics. Like anybody who's taken a fucking film course in college is going to have to watch at least a couple Kubrick films.
Right. Anyone 10 years out of college will be like, yeah, Kubrick could have cut like 40 minutes out of most of his stuff.
Nah.
Yeah.
Those movies are perfect.
You're out of your goddamn mind. Even 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is probably as close to perfect as he got, still has like a whole... section of just like what is going on, why do we care?
Oh my god, what would you cut out of Full Metal Jacket?
The entire
second, movie, fuck you,
the entire last part, which is just not good.
What?
Yeah, no, the whole thing with Joker, all that, no, none of that is good. It's all looks all like right, it's filmed just, on a sound stage.
We're just gonna have to talk about this on a separate episode because we got to talk about the big D now.
I'm not a Kubrick apologist, but yeah, let's talk about the big D, Dumbo, and the mystery of the flying elephant.
Is that what its subtitle is?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess that's my subtitle for it. It's the story of a circus baby circus elephant with big ears that can fly, and he gets in all sorts of misadventures. There's not really a plot. I figured out there's not really a driving force to this plot,
except
just saying, please stop being mean to Dumbo.
There's not really anything of substance in this movie at all. I think even visually, it was kind of underwhelming compared to Burton's like previous films. I'm just going to put it out there, man. I did not like this movie at all. I didn't have a good time watching it. I found very few redeemable qualities.
Okay, I had a little bit of a warmer take on you. I generally enjoyed it, even though it's very surface level. The biggest criticisms, I'll say, like the characters. Let's just get right into the characters.
Yeah.
They're all very underdeveloped. They're pretty one note. The child actors are not good, especially Thandie Newton's daughter.
That's her daughter? Yeah. That's Thandie Newton's daughter?
Right. And then the movie never explains why... So Colin Farrell gets back from the war. He's got one arm. It's hilarious. Everybody yeah. loves it. And he's got these two kids. One of them is clearly mixed race. And the other one is clearly all white. Like, they didn't even try.
I mean, no, I don't know. Like, so personal story.
Because his wife is definitely black. Like, they cut to, first of all, like...
Yeah, no, his wife is black. But, so, here's the thing. So, like, I'm mixed race, and if we're talking about, like, skin color and skin tone, I am significantly whiter than my brother. So, that's, like... I can see that happening. I didn't really have a problem with that, of like having a darker skin child and a lighter skin child in a mixed race family.
No, it's
like,
not even just the lighter skin. It's he was displaying no phenotypes of,
I didn't know you were a fucking phrenologist now, Dan. Jesus.
not phrenotypes, phenotypes. He just looked like a regular white kid. And you see you got Colin Farrell and his his wife in the movie looks very, She looks black, and she is black, and she could not even pass for like white. It looks like,
yeah,
like she has a lot of traits like associated with African Americans, and this son does not look like he had two white parents.
Yeah,
which I bet he did.
That was weird. I don't know why they did that. Maybe it was just to make up for like the Jim Crows in the original Dumbo. Oh, because you know about that, though, right? Because I know you said you haven't seen the original Dumbo.
I read some stuff about the original Dumbo and stuff they like took out.
It's,
and I'm like,
it's,
oh yeah, that makes
fucking
sense.
Racist. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. And I noticed that when the train is like going by in Joplin, Missouri, and you have a bunch of white boys and one black boy. And I'm like, yeah, I don't
not
know.
Gonna,
if you
that's
guys
not
know
happening.
About Joplin,
yeah.
Missouri.
Like,
yeah.
This is some revisionist history bullshit.
Yeah. Right. Well,
yeah.
Gosh. So you got, so I think the best character, I don't even know, because I don't really know why anybody does anything in this movie.
They don't really have reasons for it.
Right. Like Danny DeVito is both completely like contemptuous of his employees, but also their family.
Yeah. And he cares deeply for them. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And Colin Farrell's a war hero, but has to work at the circus. Like, you know, obviously I don't know how World War One veterans were. But if you lose your arm, you get like a pretty big pension. Like,
not only that, also like it completely cripples your ability to actually work. And I thought that maybe that was like a thematic element that they were going to go for in this film. Like, oh, they're bringing in like World War One trauma. And like, even if not like in a very deep way, like it's still a kid's movie, but I thought they were going to at least acknowledge like how much harder it was him for Colin Farrell to get work as like a one armed cripple because of the war. But none of that happens. Like, one of the first things they do is they give him, like, oh, here, I made you a fucking, like, arm out of hay.
Mattress.
And cloth. Yeah.
Yeah,
like a mattress arm. And then for the rest of the movie, you can tell that it's just his actual arm. Because, like,
we can't CGI this out here.
He just naturally bends it. Like, I know, like, he's probably trying not to move it. But, like, prosthetic arms, especially ones made out of cotton, don't have joints. Like,
Yeah, it's real strange the way that they handle that.
And for as much money as this movie got, like, this movie had a pretty big budget. I don't know why
they
couldn't just take care of it.
They spent it all on Dumbo, though.
I guess. All that clown
makeup.
Which
Dumbo is real cute, I'll say it.
I mean, yeah, Dumbo's got cute eyes. He looks hilarious in the clown makeup.
No, I was... All right, this movie... Maybe this is, like, what really, like, led me to it, is that... Anytime people were being mean to Dumbo, I got really upset. Like, yeah. I was like, we're just like, no, leave him alone. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Like in Joplin, Missouri, when they all like reveal, like, oh, he's got big ears. Ha, he's not Jumbo, he's Dumbo. Y'all, people deserve to die.
All these people do deserve to die, and their descendants perished in the Joplin tornado of like 2013 or 2011 or whatever. So, you know, they got their dues, but. What really got me was how everybody was making fun of Dumbo. He's like, oh, he's got such big ears. That's a fake. It's a fake elephant. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's what you guys are like crying at the circus for? And then the problem is solved by having the elephant fly, as if like the cries of a fake elephant because of how big its ears were going to be alleviated by that elephant then flying around the tent. Like...
I don't care if you're from Joplin, Missouri or New York City. If you laugh at Dumbo and make him feel bad, you deserve to die. Gosh, but you're right. Like the part of them taking it more seriously and having like, oh, look, it's Dumbo in real life. I'm like, this, you know, this elephant's real cute. And then it flies. It just like, I don't even know what this movie was supposed to be, but I can't think, because the whole point should have been like, oh, we want it, like Dumbo needs to make enough money to buy his mom back.
Yeah.
And that's not even the plot of the movie, though. Like,
it's not.
The movie also just kind of like trips its way through these set pieces of just moving things place to place. And nobody really has any incentive. Like, what is the big, you know, Michael Keaton's incentive is like, you need a loan from the bank.
Right.
And they won't
also,
give
they
you credit.
Also, they just casually
unless...
drop that. Like, they barely pay any... Like, again, his motivation is just dropped in, like, one line of dialogue. Like, it was weird to see, what's his name, Alan Arkin, just show up in the film. I was like, oh, I didn't know he was in this film. Playing this banker.
Barely is, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, by the way, Michael Keaton doesn't have any money. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense for his motivation, but also like, was this theme park already built, or did you build it after you bought Dumbo? Like,
yeah,
it looked like they were going through the grand opening of it in the movie.
Yeah, I'm very confused on a lot of things. The CGI is like standard late era Tim Burton bad.
Yeah,
except for Dumbo, I think like the Dumbo CGI is real good.
Yeah. But it's weird how cheap everything else in this movie looks. I guess it's because everything
it looks
went
like,
to Dumbo.
Right. It looks like through the looking glass. Like, it just looks like a very poorly put together CGI fest, in which it sucks because Tim Burton, honestly, has probably one of the best filmographies, like, of all time. Like, he has more amazing movies than Tarantino has movies. Like,
does he, though? Like, so this is something I was thinking about when I was watching this film, mainly because I was like, man, Tim Burton hasn't really made like a great film since probably, I would say his last like legitimately great film, in my opinion, is Sweeney Todd. I fucking love Sweeney Todd.
I'll just read off a few that he has. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which I would say is a cult classic, if anything else.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice, the first Batman, Edward Scissorhands, Batman Returns, he was a writer on The Nightmare Before Christmas.
He didn't direct it.
Ed Wood, Batman Forever, which he was a producer on, which is bad. Mars Attacks, which is a very solid movie.
That's fun.
Sleepy Hollow, which is very solid movie.
I think Sleepy Hollow is super
amazing.
Underrated.
Corpse Bride,
I
Sweeney
love
Todd.
Corpse Bride.
And then we get into the bad spots.
You get late era Burton, which is like, you know, post 2007 Burton.
Right. Is Big Eyes good? Big Eyes is supposed to be good, right?
I hear it's supposed to be okay. Like, apparently it's his most restrained film. And I'm like, that doesn't really sound like a compliment to Tim Burton. Like,
yeah. He's got a pretty solid run in here.
He has a solid run, but it's just sad because, like, his older films are legitimately iconic. And, like, he had a style, he had an aesthetic that was immediately identifiable. And I think it's just gone now. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be able to recapture it. And it's not like, I don't know if it's any fault of his own or if it's the fault of like him working with like studios like Disney, or if maybe he just lost his edge as he got older. But it's kind of saddening just to see like where his career is going and how somebody that directed films as iconic as like Sleepy Hollow, Edward Scissorhands, like, you know, who jump started Batman's silver screen presence,
yeah,
go to directing a film like this or like Alice in Wonderland, and just the films that obviously make money but are immediately forgettable as soon as you leave the theater.
Yeah, I think he might need to do some, I mean, because most of his stuff have been like weird adaptations.
Yeah,
you know, we've got Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, Frankenweenie, which is based on like his first ever like short like film, right?
Yeah, Frankenweenie's good. I like Frankenweenie.
Yeah, and then Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar. Yeah, I'm just...
Yeah, I heard that wasn't great.
Yeah, so it just begs the question of when... Maybe they just need to stop giving him money and be like, hey, make something like small.
I would like that.
Like, he's still getting some big budgets. Like, this budget was like $170 million.
It's not even that. Like, one, holy shit, I didn't realize this movie cost $170 million. Holy shit.
It's Disney, baby.
That's not even including marketing.
Yeah.
But I don't think, honestly, sometimes it feels like the budget isn't the problem, because I think he can do great work with a big budget. And I think sometimes his style, like his extravagant gothic style, like usually calls for a budget big enough to support the weight of what he wants to show on screen.
Well, but, what do you think is like a big, like, what, you know, what do you think the budget of Sweeney Todd was?
But
it was only like,
I bet it was like 40 to 50 million.
Something like that. Yeah.
To me, that's still a big budget. Like, I think of small budgets as like sub 10 million.
Okay. Well, I think he needs to be in that 50 million range.
Yeah. I think that's a good range for him to be in. But I do also think that if he was given that budget with a non Disney, like non family friendly film, he could do some great things. Really, what I want to see him do is I want to see him go back to R rated films.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I want to see another Sleepy Hollow. I want to see another Sweeney Todd. Like, I want to, like, he excels at violence. He excels at gothic violence that's also, like, both, again, terrifying and comedic. I think he works really well in that realm. But part of me also wonders, like, how relevant is his style today?
When, like, everything is gothic, like, everything is scary. So why do we need this kind of, like, he just might need to pivot, because I don't know if we're... Like, think about, like, the movies that it really worked. Like, Sleepy Hollow, of course, that's the perfect story for that style. Sweeney Todd, perfect.
Yeah. Okay, so, maybe, okay.
You know, even Batman, like, still really good. So does he, like, what could he adapt?
I think
he might just need to, like, move around. Yeah.
This is my pitch that, I mean, it's never going to happen. Probably wouldn't be good anyway, but I would still like to see it. I would love to see Tim Burton direct the BioShock film adaptation. Either Tim Burton or Gore Verbinski. But since we're talking about Tim Burton, I would love to see Tim Burton's take on the BioShock world. And I think we got glimpses of that, like that Art Deco style that he's kind of leaning towards. It seems like in his older age through Dumbo. So I think, you know, that what a Dream World or Dreamland, whatever the theme park was called. I really like the aesthetic.
Dreamland?
Yeah. Dreamland, Dream World, whatever it was called.
No, I remember it. Just never mind.
But I think that him leaning harder into that Art Deco style, like, you, because you can still have kind of like a gothic feeling with these dark foreboding structures, but just have it have it using the more modernized Art Deco style and less, like, you know, cathedrals, less Victorian era gothic, and I get gothic kind of, I don't know. I don't even really know how to properly define gothic. I feel like it's kind of a widespread
pointy artistic ceilings. Movement.
That's what I thought initially, but apparently it's a lot more than that. But like an Art Deco gothic aesthetic, I think could work super well for BioShock. And also it kind of feels like the direction that he wants to go in with his future films.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, there's really, we'll just have to wait and see on that, because right now my faith in Tim Burton is really low.
Yeah.
But at least we still have his discography.
Yeah. And it's still good.
Filmography. Yeah, still good. I don't know what else I really have to say. The things that stuck well for me was just the emotionality of Dumbo, but really everything else I could have done without. Like, nothing else was done right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The humor fell flat. The score was pretty good. Danny Elfman was
on point. Yeah, the score was good. Danny Elfman, he's always on point. The score was good. The other things that I liked in this film, I liked Danny DeVito just because he's Danny DeVito. He was doing his shtick. Nothing too special there, but it's still fun to watch. I really liked Michael Keaton. I think he gives a pretty entertaining performance in this, and I want to see him
switching between accents.
Yeah.
The entire movie.
I want to see him play more villains because I think he's just at that age now where, like, God damn, he was so good in Spider-Man Homecoming. He was pretty solid in this. He's probably my favorite aspect of this film. I think it was just fun to watch him, like, and when he starts losing his shit at the end of the movie, like, that was so fun when he starts just hitting everybody with his cane and he's just like, get me that elephant. I'm like, all right, man, whatever, I'm here for this. Like,
yeah, he really seemed to blow out into a caricature, I mean, for me at least, which the movie kind of burns itself down at the end
literally,
and like, yeah, where it's like, oh, we're just gonna be like this weird caper thing. Evergreen is also in this movie for no reason.
Oh, right.
Doing this really bad French accent.
But, like, she's French.
But she doesn't have an accent.
I don't know if she does or not. I've never actually heard her in an interview. But I'm sure
it was probably, she's like French English.
It was probably exaggerated for this film.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she spends time with. Yeah, nationality French.
Yeah. I do want to say another thing that I really fucking hated about this film is how it, like, I feel like it patted itself on the back for being like, oh, this is a progressive take on Dumbo because of the little girl character who's just like, I like science. We're gonna solve awesome. This problem with the scientific method. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, do you have a personality or are you just science, girl? Like,
it's like, I'm all science, baby.
Yeah. But she runs away to the, like, what is it, the Marie Curie display.
And oh, yeah.
I'm like, God, man, are you fucking, like, you made your point when you had her deliver the stilted-ass dialogue of, like, so I want to be noticed for my mind. Like, okay, we get it.
Cool. Yeah, we'll do that. We will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but please, for now, do the work that will put food on the table.
Yeah, because we need that. Also, fuck you for being as condescending as you are to all these people who spend their entire livelihoods perfecting, like, whatever physical aspect of their performances. Like, you think you're just better than that? You think you're better than they are? Fuck you.
There's some real classism in here.
Absolutely.
She represents New York and they all represent Joplin, Missouri. Out of touch.
That's why she wasn't laughing at Dumbo.
Yeah. So I think overall, you know, I do not recommend seeing this movie unless it's for free.
Even for free.
There is a cute moment where Dumbo, like, with the balloon, like the bubble elephants are dancing.
Oh, okay. So,
and Dumbo is like nodding along to the music.
That was cute, but that really fucked me up too, because I was watching that and I was like, so they have the technology to manipulate air and bubbles to create this like badass display of dancing elephants. Why would they be impressed with a flying elephant at this point? Like, that shit's way cooler than any circus act that's gonna follow it. Like,
right. Yeah, it's like, oh, these magic dancing bubbles.
Yeah.
And Alan Arkin's character is like, yeah, what, but what else?
Yeah. I want to see an elephant.
Right. I don't want to see these magic balloons. I want to see these magic bubbles. I want to see a flying elephant.
Also, so you know how he requires a feather to fly? Like, I don't even remember if that was in the original Dumbo or not. But
sure, yeah, no, I remember the movie, yeah.
Does he eat the feather? Like he sucks it in his nose, and the whole time I was just like, every time he did that, I just wanted to fucking sneeze. I just wanted to force myself to sneeze. I was like, that looks so uncomfortable. Just to snort a fucking feather, like.
Right. I thought that was the whole point, is that, like, he has to sneeze to get the lift off.
But other times he doesn't, like.
They never explain it.
Yeah.
They never explain it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really need explaining. Like, this is a movie about a fucking flying elephant. I don't need that to be explained. But I'm just like, that's kind of weird. If he's just 100%. Eating feathers to fly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. That,
agreed,
those are my
yeah.
closing thoughts on the film.
All right. Yeah. So overall, yeah, film, flick, doesn't matter. Both kind of thumbs down on this one.
Yeah. Kind of trash.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, the good news is next week we've got a quite the adventure. What do we got next week, Rob?
We got a Shazam.
Shazam. Shazam.
Also known as the original Captain Marvel.
Yeah, the original Captain Marvel. And... also, are we going to do a double feature? Are we going to do Pet Sematary as well?
Oh, I forgot that was this weekend too. Yeah, we're going to have to.
Oh boy, I am so not ready for Pet Sematary.
Dude, you already watched Hereditary. Like, there's, I doubt any movie until Ari Aster's next film comes out is going to be as traumatic as Hereditary.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Plus, this movie has John Lithgow in it. Like,
ooh. Right, and he gets tendon stabbed,
so
or whatever.
Who gives a shit? It's John Lithgow.
Yeah, it's a nice old Appalachian man.
Yeah.
I should have never showed you that place.
They're cats. You know, they can't even spell cemetery right on their marketing.
Yes, yeah, stupid.
It's a
stupid.
Comedy.
It's a, yeah, this is, yeah, best comedy of 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right. Until next time, I'll do the little sign off. You can follow me at the Dan Leo Show. That's Twitter, and then Letterboxd D Leo. And then, you know, the podcast website, you know how to get to it. ViewingAnglesPodcast.com. subscribe, rate all your favorite podcasts, little services. We're on Spotify now. If you're not listening on Spotify, listen on Spotify. And, you know, the Twitter is at Viewing Angles. What about you, Rob? What do the people need to know?
You can follow me at Robert Jr. JR. You can also follow me on Letterboxd and Twitter and Instagram at Robert Jr. JR. We got some hot new merch dropping on the website, so check that out if you want to represent. If you want to show off to the fact or to the world that you are a true nut.
True nut.
True nut. God damn it. I can't keep going
voted.
On after
the people voted, Robert.
And it's all because I shouldn't have put that poll out there. What have I done?
Yeah, it's really all your fault.
Oh, God. But yeah, tune in next week for a double feature, Shazam and Pet Sematary. I don't know which one I want to see first. I don't know which one Dan's going to see first. I don't know.
I think I might do just like a double feature.
Same day.
And go.
Yeah.
Yeah, do Pet Sematary and then go into Shazam.
Immediately cleanse your palate with Shazam. That's probably the right call.
Right. Get to the movies at like 3 p.m. Don't leave till like 7.
Yeah, I love nights like that. Those are the best.
Yeah. All right. Well, until next week, this has been us. And
bye.